Hey friend, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here listening to another episode of the Pattern Design Circle podcast. Here we talk all about the ins and outs of designing knit and crochet patterns and running a business that makes it all possible. I'm Jessica, your host, knitting pattern designer, design mentor, and the friend in your ear. Can't wait to dive right in. The Pattern Design Circle podcast is sponsored by the Pattern Design Circle, a membership community for knit and crochet pattern designers that are feeling lost, lonely, or frustrated in their business. It connects you with a supportive community that's always eager to answer your questions and help you through the hard times. And there's loads of resources and activities specifically catered to business and designing. Sound like your jam? Check it out at snickerdoodleknits.com/design-circle. That's snickerdoodle, like the cookie, knits.com/design-circle. All right, let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to the Pattern Design Circle podcast. I'm so excited to be here in your ear again. And this time I have an extra special guest with me. We have Shelly Brander, who you may know from Loops Yarn Shop, Knit Stars, and her book, Move the Needle. I'm so excited to have her here because I recently read the book and there's so much as a business owner that I could connect to. And I immediately contacted Shelly. I'm like, can we talk? So I'm so excited to have Shelly here. Do you have anything else you want to share about yourself, Shelly?
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I loved when I got your note. I was like, okay, we're going to have to talk. And you pretty much nailed it. The company, yeah, I started out with a store called Loops Yarn Store. And now we started Knit Stars Masterclasses, which became very global. And so now the whole brand is known as Knit Stars. And we have the masterclasses, we have a club, we have a flagship yarn store in Tulsa, 6,000 square feet, and we have an online store. So yeah, it's a busy, busy world and it's awesome. So yeah. You nailed it. And I actually have two books, believe it or not. I have a book that came before the moving wheel. Yeah, called Untangled. It was kind of a practice run book, but it's become people really like it as a resource book. You know, it's more of a workbook almost. So
yes, yeah. I need to get that book. I know you talked about it.
I'm happy to send you one.
Yes. So really this chat, we're talking basically about the book, the journey of entrepreneurship and life as a whole. I feel like I could just sit down with you in person and talk page by page about the whole thing for like a month solid. I know we're going to cover a lot here in the next hour. And really, the reason I love this book so much is because it resonated with me personally. It's like, I felt like we're the same person, and I highly recommend the book to all of the designers listening, any other entrepreneurs out there, because it really is, it is about the journey of entrepreneurship from your personal perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tried to be as real as I possibly could. Because I know there's a lot of books out there that act like everything is perfect and easy, and it's definitely not. I don't know a single entrepreneur who's had a perfect, easy ride. So yeah. And then there's the whole book that's happened since I wrote that book. So I've been outlining the next one. So there's always more to hear and learn. So yeah.
Yes. Yes. So the first thing I wanted to talk about, which really we've already started to touch on, is this whole idea of changing your mind as you work through and in your business or in life in general, and changing paths, because you've already had several different shifts, starting with branding, and then into the yarn shop, and then into Knit Stars, and now as an author.
Yeah, lots of shifts.
So did you ever deal with the ideas of fear of failure in these changes, or fear of like what other people would think as you're making these transitions?
I think everybody has some of that. I think kind of the bigger thing is what you touched on at the beginning of that question is a lot of people think I'm going to get it perfect and then I'll be able to set it and just forget it. And I think that's the dream of every entrepreneur, is like, oh, I'm going to get my business just right. I'm going to get my yarn mix and my store exactly right. And then it'll just go on autopilot, or I'm going to get this funnel set up online and it's just going to work. And the reality is, and the biggest truth is, and I think it's the biggest permission you can give somebody who's entrepreneurial, is if you're not changing and growing, you are dying. So it actually, if you're not changing as an entrepreneur, you are not doing what you need to do. So when you have the urge to change, you know, and it gets harder the bigger you get, because now I have this amazing team and I'm always out there like coming up with new ideas to make things better and innovate. And then they're like, wait, because we're just trying to finish the last idea, right? And so when you get a team, it gets a little harder. But I want to give permission to anybody who's in especially the solopreneur phase. It's not just okay for you to be changing. It's necessary to be changing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, go ahead.
There's so many new and different paths that open up when you're open to change. Like when we first start, there's no way we could ever know where all it might've brought us. If we're just stuck in this idea of this is what I'm going to do and be, and I can't change.
Right. I mean, imagine if you were like, oh, I've got my Facebook perfect, so I'm not going to pay attention to that Instagram thing, or I have Instagram perfect, so I don't need to pay attention to TikTok. It's like, not that you need to do them all. You definitely need to weigh everything. And there's definitely such a thing as shiny object syndrome, where you're just drawn to everything. But, you know, I talk in the book about the blue water, blue ocean and red ocean. You always have to be going for the thing that other people aren't doing. And that's okay. It's okay. And other people will try to tell you, other people that are, you know, the engineers in your life and the people that like things more the same will tell you, what are you doing? You're always coming up with this crazy idea. That means you're an entrepreneur.
Yes. Yes. That's so funny that you mentioned the engineers, because my education, I'm an engineer by education. But
that,
here, right? I am in the entrepreneurship world. Like,
exactly.
It clearly wasn't the best fit for me.
Right. And there are very entrepreneurial engineers out there, and they are very lucky because they have both sides of the brain, right? But I'm just saying, yeah. We all have plenty of people in our life that have followed a more traditional path. And it's just really important that, not that you block those people out, but that you surround yourself more so with other like-minded entrepreneurs, so that you're not constantly questioning yourself. Is this okay? Is this okay? You know, you want to always be pressing forward. So
yes. Yeah. Can we go back real quick to the blue ocean concept? Because I don't think I'd ever heard of that specific terminology. So what is the blue ocean and what is the red?
Yeah. And this is really applicable now for me because I just moved to Florida. and I had never heard of it either. And I, in talking to somebody, I think it was my book editor, actually, I was talking to my book editor and she was like, you're a blue ocean person. Like, you've always gone for the blue ocean. I said, what are you talking about? Well, it turns out there's this whole book and even like, I think even an online course called Blue Ocean Strategy. And the basic idea is, when you're out in the ocean, you're swimming around and the water is blue, you're good. But when you start to do well, or you figure something out, like when I first figured out Loops Club, that was my first online product, all of a sudden the water starts to turn red because all the sharks come around. Everybody follows you and starts to do the same thing you're doing. And then you need to pivot out of that red ocean where all the blood is in the water and go to the blue. And so you always want to be going to the thing that other people are not doing. What is that thing? Because that's what the marketplace needs. If the marketplace gets saturated with the thing you're doing, and we're back to that, you always have to be inventing and creating. It's not just a maybe, it's a must.
Yes. Yeah. And I love like just the different illustration of this idea of being unique and the idea of saturated market. Like, yeah, there's all the sharks. There's lots of other people in the ocean, but there is a part of the ocean that's blue that you can actually get into.
And that's weird. That's the you part, right? Because even if there's a gazillion people out there, let's say you're a sock designer, you know, there's a gazillion sock designers out there, but there's only one. There's only one Summer Lee who has Summer Lee's aesthetic with Summer Lee's socks and Summer Lee's colors, right? There's only one of you. So when you find that red, one way to find your way to that blue ocean is just go back to, who am I? What am I about? Because there is only one of you, you know, and just go back to your core of what you love and what lights you up. So,
yes. And My next note on here, because I did actually make notes. Most of my podcasts, I don't. But there's so many things that I wanted to talk about. My next like bullet on that was just the idea of listening to your gut, because these pivots and changes, they come from the gut first. Like you might start to sense something, but like really the answer comes from your gut. It's not a, oh, everybody else is, you know, now doing something online shopping, and so that's why you did it, but it came from yourself.
Right. And you can do all your research, and you should do your due diligence on what everyone else does. But then, yeah, it's that thing. And I think that's what, when I tell people they're really struggling with, do I pivot into something entrepreneurial? Do I move into, do I start, take that leap? And I say, it's that if your gut keeps bugging you about it, like it won't let it go. And it's because some ideas come and go, and you can like mentally go, okay, that's a good idea. And you, then it just kind of dissipates and disappears. But it's kind of like with owning a yarn store. When I would look at all the different yarns, if there was this one yarn that I couldn't put down that I just like would have a visceral reaction to, that was the yarn that I had to have. It doesn't matter what the research shows, like I need this yarn. It's like that. If you have this idea that just keeps, you cannot put it down, your gut cannot stop thinking about it, that's the one you want to go with. So
yes. So then I think because when we listen to our gut, we have a lot more invested into it too. And mm-hmm. so you talk a lot in your book about how you've put your heart into your work and really invested yourself in it. The first example that I thought of was when you knit the cashmere scarf for, you were looking for where you were going to open your yarn shop, where it was actually going to be located. And you had this specific spot picked out and you kept trying to get in. Uh-huh. And ultimately what you ended up doing was knitting a cashmere scarf for the owner.
Uh-huh.
And that was like, you just like invested so much as a gift to him.
Well, and that's the thing. I thought, again, what is the thing that I can do that it will be unforgettable, that only I can do, that mm-hmm. nobody else who's trying to get a lease in this shopping center is doing? You know, what's the one thing? And what am I most passionate about? Yarn. So this yarn, I ordered cashmere yarn from New York City. And yeah, I made him a scarf. I found out where he lived, which required some stalking. And I dropped it off with the doorman at this building on Christmas Eve. And then the day after New Year's, I got the lease offer. I had been trying for 2 years. I called every single month for 2 years trying. And I was like, I've got to give it one last shot. I'm going to give it my very best shot. I don't know where that scarf is today. I assume it's, you know, somewhere with one of his family members or something, because he has passed. And he was notoriously, you know, he's a billionaire that owned a huge oil company and had this little shopping center on the side. By the way, if that noise, if you can hear it, is that there's a sprinkler outside that's hitting my wall.
So I can't hear it. So
that's what that is. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. So I couldn't believe it. And then I was like, oh gosh, now I got to actually build a store. You know, I had kind of given up. I'm like, okay, one last shot. But I'm like, go back to what's that? I mean, a lot of people watching this probably have a yarn connection, right? Have that like superpower. It's like, what is a superpower that you have that nobody else can use? You know, I've many times made hats or different things for people, either because they've done something that really stood out to me. I try to make something every year for someone who doesn't expect it, you know, like the UPS guy or whatever, but, or use it. I mean, it's a skill. It's a huge, powerful skill. There is nothing like a handmade thing when you hand it to somebody, you know? Yes. So, yeah. Yes.
And then the other thing under this conversation, in my mind that stood out was you had come up with one idea that you absolutely loved with the branding company, when you were working in branding and marketing, and your boss didn't love it as much as you did. And mm-hmm. he told you that you have 1,000 more good ideas inside.
Yes. Yes. Which made me mad. Yes. I really wanted him to buy off on the idea that I had that I thought was so brilliant. And I think it was about a bank, and it was like big enough to bank on, small enough to care or something. I was like, I was 21, 22 years old, and I thought it was the smartest thing anyone had ever come up with. It was the cheesiest, tritest thing. And you know, that was very gentle of him because he was not a gentle guy, but it was very gentle to say it. And that's the thing. There's a million ideas that others done. Almost everything has been done in some way before already, you know, and it's just coming up with your own spin that like, that really lands. And yeah, 20 years in branding made me pretty thick skinned. I mean, you're putting your creativity out on the line multiple times every single day. And you just, you know, it's just like acting. You're just going to get, you know, shot down with no, it is not a gentle business. So it did make me pretty thick skinned and able to, you know, like, so today, if I might, you know, you get 1,000 positive comments online and one negative one, it's like, not that it's easy for anyone, but it has is a little easier to let it roll off the back.
Yeah,
when you have thicker skin. So
yes, yeah. Yes, because so many people, I mean, I think kind of our human nature tendency is to focus on that one. It's like,
right,
you have thousands of wonderful comments, and then it's easy to just focus on the one negative one.
Of course, we all do that. So yes. Yeah.
But then, kind of, I guess my idea with putting it under the idea of really putting your heart into your work is there's something, maybe you have some idea that feels really good, like you're really excited about, but for some reason it's just not working out. You can keep putting your heart into more ideas and really find the path that is the golden ticket. That is the wonderful, exciting thing.
For sure. You have to be clear-eyed about that. I think that's where it's helpful to have advisors, even if not paid advisors, because I know and not everyone can afford that, especially early on, but mentors that you can go to and just check in on yourself, because we can hold on. I mean, anyone that's seen a yarn store that's stayed in business 5 years longer than it needs to, right? And the shelves get emptier and emptier, you know, like this is a thing of human nature too. That's the balance. Like you want to be inventing, you got to have honest people around you that'll say, hey, you know what, maybe it's time, or maybe it's time to just do this one little tweak. You know, maybe this one little tweak that's going to get you there. You have to learn to let go of those things that you're just clenched onto eventually, right?
Yes, yes. And it can be hard because you have put your heart into it. Like, this is so part of you. But in order to go forward, in order to do more, you have to let go of that thing.
Right. And I mean, you might have a pattern that's not selling, but it's like your favorite pattern you've ever designed. It's like, okay, what, how can you tweak it? Like, how can you do it in a different, maybe get a partner with a different indie dyer and do it in a slightly different, you know, colorway or something? Like what can you do if you really, really believe in it, you know, pivot a little bit and try something, you know, before you abandon it. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then so part of this idea of having lots of ideas, it belongs to us. But then we're trying to give it to somebody else. We're trying to share it with somebody else. And we really want them to love it. And and so then it's easy to fall into this trap of people pleasing and really wanting them to be happy with it and to love it. And one of the instances that I really loved in your book that you kind of talked about this idea of people pleasing was when you had the two stores that they were already existing and there were starting to be some issues because of the two stores. Right. You're starting to feel the move to combine the stores again and to have one unified front. And you were really, really nervous about bringing this up to your team. And so one thing that you wrote was that you were wanting to make everyone happy and wanting the impossible. Mm-hmm. And that is so, so true. We can't ever make yep. everybody happy. And then I forgot to mark this one. But you then said, in my lowest moments, I thought seriously about shutting it all down. That would be easier than closing one of the stores. I could spin it. I told myself I'd rather close up shop entirely than have Loops die a long, slow, very public death. And I totally resonate. I've never owned a yarn shop, but totally resonate with this idea of, okay, if I'm not making everybody happy, if it feels like now it's a failure, Oh, I'm just going to give up entirely and move on to something else.
Fight or flight, basically, right? Fight or flight, like self-protection, you know, and just denial. And I mean, I had everybody telling me, you know, like I, and the numbers were telling me, I mean, every single sign was saying, abandon all ye who enter here, you know, like it's time to just leave. And I mean, the signs were pointing to go back to one because it was more successful with one store. All the energy was positive. All the people were in the same place. All the projects were in the same place. We didn't have as many tech issues. But it was like an ego thing because we had gotten a lot of notoriety for having two shops in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And some people thought, oh, this is somebody to watch. And I was so hung up on that I wouldn't see any of the other signs. So I finally said, okay, you know, like I was so close to just shut it all down. So close. I mean, like days from it. And it hit me, you know, like, okay, I will take the bullet. I will take the lumps. I will do this new store, this one store, and give it, you know, X number of years. And I was lucky too, because I got approached by a shopping center that was like, hey, we really want you. And it was halfway between the two stores geographically. And they were offering to do a nice build out for me. And I was like, I mean, I really struggled because I think at that point I could have switched to online and probably done fine, maybe done better, right? But I just really believed in the local yarn store. You know, I just, and we did it again, right? Here just last year, we doubled in size and moved and stuff. So yeah, it is the pleasing. I wanted to please everybody. I wanted everyone to be happy. I want everything to be perfect. It's not possible. So yeah. That was a moment. And I knew that it was, I didn't even know it was right until the morning that we opened the doors. I had stayed up to like 3 a.m. hanging fixtures and stuff and just in a mad dash to get it open. And when I went to bed, I had this feeling of peace that I hadn't had in a long time. Probably I was just exhausted. But I woke up at like 6 and I felt like so alive. And I went into the store and I just knew it was the right thing. And I didn't know until that moment. And then I went in the store and then there was a huge crowd and it was immediately a different vibe than it had been for all the previous years. And then shortly thereafter, all the online exploded. So it was definitely the right thing, but man, going through that, it's so hard. It's so hard. I mean, again, I can't overemphasize like advisors and people that have been there that can help shepherd you through it, you know?
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. I think that is like the summary of the ups and downs, the best parts and the worst parts of entrepreneurship.
Like, yeah.
You have to go through that misery of like making those hard decisions and really coming to understand what the actual right decision is. But then once that's made, like how amazing it feels.
Yeah, I know.
It's incomparable.
Yeah, it is incomparable. It is. It's like life. It's like the juiciness of life exists in entrepreneurism, you know, and I have someone close to me right now. I'm trying to convince to take a leap from they've worked in corporate for their whole life and they are so miserable. And I know they've got the entrepreneur soul, but it's like it takes a while to like make that shift and really believe that in yourself. You know, it's especially for those of us who've worked for a long period of time in corporate world, it's even harder. I think when you're starting out as like my daughter right now is about to graduate college, she'll graduate in the spring. And she can already picture herself as like a consultant and as an entrepreneur and stuff. But you have that certain fearlessness. If you go along for 10, 20, 30 years in corporate with a paycheck, it's there's an extra layer of scary for sure, you know? But you know, it's doable. It just, you really have to surround yourself with other people that are like-minded. So that is so valid. Are you sure you don't want me to do it? Can you hear it? You have to be
able
to.
I can't hear it at all.
Oh my gosh. This microphone on this laptop must be amazing. It sounds like there's a deluge outside my door. There's like a sprinkler directly pointing at the door and like, it's so loud. Okay, good. I'm glad you can hear it.
yes. So another quote from your book was really just emphasizing this again, that this decision, it wasn't a failure, or like all of the yarn shop stuff together wasn't a failure. It was just a new beginning. And like it was an unexpected new beginning because you weren't as optimistic about it as maybe you wanted to be.
Right. And someone explained it to me because I've had a lot of major life changes just since the book came out in the last 6 months. About 6 months, 6, 7 months ago, I got divorced. I, my husband of 27 years, And I moved from Tulsa to Florida. I relocated, like a lot of changes. And during all that, and I've been doing a lot of personal growth work the last few years. And it was explained to me, I can't remember, by my business coach. The way they explained it is like life and entrepreneurship. It's like steps, right? And you go along on kind of a platform, and then you take a step up to the next platform, and you maybe go along really long time. You take a little step, or you take a big step, but you never are all the way back down to zero. You always have whatever you've done and built before. All of these steps you own, and you made them happen. So you're always starting from a higher place. It just sometimes doesn't feel like it, right?
Yes.
So yeah. It's like when I got to that point in my life of like, okay, it's time to move on past the marriage. Like that can feel like all the way back down to the bottom, right? But it really wasn't, because we both had gone through so much growth together that it was like, it was just a natural evolution next step, right? So, yeah, that's what it's like. And so I think you can easily beat yourself up and think you've fallen all the way down the hill back to the start, and you haven't, because you're always building on the knowledge and the I have a friend who says you either win or you learn, right? My friend Susan Garrett, I think I said that in the book too. You either win or you learn. You either it's a big win or it's not a failure. You just learn something new that you can apply the next time.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. A visual that I really like, that I recently shared on my podcast titled "It's Not Failing, It's Learning," right, was this picture of a spiral. So you can feel like you're going round and round in circles and like overcoming the same obstacles and learning the same lessons, but actually it's a spiral up. Like you are making progress as you go up. Yeah. We just kind of, there is a cycle of some sort,
yes,
of learning new things.
Like a maze. You're finding your way out of the maze. little by little. Every outer, every ring you go outer, you're getting closer to getting out of the maze. Yeah. True.
And so one more part of just this experience for you with the bringing the two yarn shops to one, that I loved and wanted to share with the podcast listeners was when you made the announcement to your team. You weren't sure how they were going to take it. And it was like you had a support system there that you didn't even realize like how supportive they were, because you shared that when you shared the announcement, they just all started applauding, like clapping. Yeah. They were so excited about this change. And I think often we can take for granted our support systems or not even realize who is actually a support around us and who is our best cheerleaders.
Sure. I think a lot of us have one person, sometimes a parent, sometimes a friend that we're looking to, we tend to get hyper-focused on one person that we're seeking their approval. And we forget that we are surrounded by a bunch of people who, and in that process, there were one or two in the store that I was worried would be critical of the decision. Turns out everybody was on board, but I wasn't again, it's like the online followers, right? I wasn't paying attention to all the ones that were supportive and that thought that what we were doing was amazing. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the one or two that I thought might be critical. So yeah, pay attention, like take full stock of everybody around you. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, even just kind of building your own bench of support system that might include entrepreneurs that you know, it might include advisors in finance or tech or whatever, but also who are those friends who always are 100% your cheerleaders, no matter what, they're not the ones that are sitting over there going, they seem good on the surface and then they're over there, you know, they're jealous. No, like the ones that like are so excited when you win, those people are maybe even more valuable than like the greatest CPA or whatever.
So, yes.
Yeah. It's like building the bench of supporters is really smart if you can. So
yeah, because it really is so hard to keep moving forward through all of the different messes and decisions.
Yeah.
You don't have support. You're just on yourself.
Yeah, completely. And that's why there are entrepreneurial groups out there. There's for me, probably the single most helpful thing that's helped me in my yarn career is finding non-yarn entrepreneurs to hang out with, right? Because then that there was zero competition at all. And then you can learn from what they're doing and apply them to your niche, whatever it is. And that, I almost didn't do that because I thought, well, I'm too weird with my yarn thing, right? but it is exactly the opposite of that. It was the most valuable thing. And there's gazillions of those entrepreneurial groups out there. So you look to find your fit, your people. But yeah, that Jeff Walker and that whole world, that I'm still very much a part of. I'm in a text group with them every day. And if I need a little jolt of like positive entrepreneurial weird energy, I go there and I look. So, it's really important.
Yeah. And I think especially in that context, when we go into other groups of people outside of the fiber industry, there's a different kind of energy you can source. Like, we can get caught up in everything that's happening in our industry and get caught up in what we're supposed to do or what things are supposed to look like or what is right and wrong in our industry. And there's a whole lot of other things out there that are also possibilities.
Right. Exactly. It's really easy to get tunnel vision in the industry or even in just one resource group, right? Because there's so many sources out there, really endless sources out there. You may think you found your one guru. No, there's like, a million other things out there. So you just have to keep your eyes open. So
yes. And that can get overwhelming. There's so many people out there, so many people excited to fill your inbox.
For sure. And sell you courses and stuff like that. Yeah. For me, it was, but you find your way there and cause like a lot of people do very persuasive videos and stuff. And the online marketing world has really exploded. But for me, it was, I found my way to Jeff through Will Hamilton, who teaches tennis. And he was a tennis instructor that really caught my attention because he was like super humble, which, he's got an attitude, but in tennis world he was relatively humble and relatable compared to other tennis people. I would say that to his face. He's like my little brother. and Jeff, same thing. Like when I would watch Jeff's stuff, I'm like, he seems like, my older brother. He's just very real. You can tell, you can feel that they resonate with you. And that, like, for me, that humility was really important, and when I wasn't seeing that in other kinds of online entrepreneurs necessarily, I'm not the like rah-rah get up, kind of person. So when you find that, that's if you find someone who's saying things that sound smart, but on a gut level or like a friend level, would you hang out with this person? That's probably not your person, So,
yes. Okay. So I also wanted to chat about the Cool Yarn Kids Club.
Yeah.
you mentioned, you'd started this yarn shop and you're trying to gain traction and gain customers. And you mentioned that you weren't in the Cool Yarn Kids Club. And yeah. Like my immediate thought was like, well, she is now.
I mean, I think that is I'll put it this way. I think that is an ever-changing thing. And I think there's many different pockets of the cool club. I mean, there's the Etsy club, there's the, Instant Club, there's all kinds of it. What I'm trying to do is to create a club that's not that where everyone is cool, where everyone is a rock star, right? Yeah. So I'm like, okay, yeah. It's tricky because it's like, how do you balance inclusivity and exclusivity? Like we know in our space, it's artistry, it's creativity. So exclusive is cool because we're all drawn to the unique, right? We're all just as artists, we're drawn to that. But it's finding the inclusivity in the exclusivity, right? Like what can we all gather around? What can we all get behind? What do we have in common? What do we share? And I don't know what it is. There is something in knitting, and I've talked about it a lot. People that are new to knitting don't get it. They think we're all kumbaya and everything's perfect. And what do you mean there's like infighting? And, what do you mean that there's, people are excluded? And I think there's something, there's knitters as a whole, we do tend to be a little perfectionistic. We do like what draws us to knitting is like the mechanics of all of that. And, just the control of it. Right. So there's a certain element of that. And I think that can translate somehow for a lot of people. Like once you get good at it, then without meaning to, you can look down your nose at the people that are new to it or don't have the same aesthetic as you. And so it's a very passionate bunch, right? And where you have a lot of creativity and a lot of emotion, you're going to have also, you know, potentially more conflict and more, you know, judgment and all of those things. And I've always said, why can't we get to a place where I call it not show off knitting, right? Like, mm-hmm. just hey, look, you made something that's awesome, right?
And I think social media really hinders that.
Yeah, I think that you're right, actually. You know, filters and proper photography, you know, like, yes, exactly. Social media does hinder that. So it's a catch-22, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Because when I first really entered the world of knitting, it was through podcasts on YouTube and then some on Instagram, and kind of because of the way our internet works, our social life works now online, I saw knitters over and over and over again. Like, it just became this competition of how much can I create and how much can, yeah, I, you know, like more of a competition rather than, yeah, an art that you're enjoying.
Yeah. And toxic productivity definitely is a thing too. You know, this thing, like, how many can I churn out? And I do think there's been a nice correction to that a little bit over time. Mm-hmm. You know, you see more, a lot more about acceptance and about compassion. And I think people more willing, instead of crank out a completed sweater, they're more willing to share. And maybe Reels even has helped a little with this, like, mm-hmm, the doing of it and seeing the tiny iterations and the little steps, you know, and that's cool too. And it doesn't have to be, you know, snap your fingers and there's your finished, you know, fingering weight Fair Isle sweater. So, yeah, that is a balance. And it's tough because when people come into it as newbies, it's such a vulnerable place to enter in any creative endeavor. And we just introduced this whole program called Knit Start that was all built around, you know, I was talking to my friend, Jean Triplehorn, who's from Tulsa originally, and she's a Hollywood actress. Like, people probably know her name. And I was talking to her. She has another friend who's a really accomplished author and designer and all this. We're all chatting, and every single one of us had a moment when we started out where we got judged. And we felt like we were scared to walk into a yarn shop or whatever. And then, like, I'm like, oh my gosh, this Hollywood actress got judged at a Hollywood yarn store. Like, what? And, or felt that way, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. How do we make it safe for people? As a yarn store owner, like, I wanted, how can I make it safe to walk into a yarn shop for the first time, not feel judged by the ladies at the table or the people working there or the whole experience? And then when I have that first mess up, when I have that oops, when I have to come back sheepishly with my drop stitch and I think it's irrevocable, how can I make it safe for people to come back in and, like, keep taking the steps forward, mm-hmm, right? Just little baby steps forward. And because somehow you're supposed to magically go from that first garter stitch scarf to, like, Fair Isle sweaters, right? So how, yeah, do we make a path for people and create that kind of safety net through the whole process? And I think there's a whole lot of knitters out there in the world who started and gave up and never came back because they felt so judged or, like, such failures. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of my ongoing mission right now is, even with masterclasses, they can look really advanced. I mean, they're masterclasses, right? We're like, no, you can literally not even know how to stitch yet and you can take the class. But how do you make people, how do you encourage people and give them permission to enroll in themselves, to, like, invest in that one skein of yarn or the masterclasses at a level of $200, you know, and believe that even if they never make anything, they get the enjoyment out of it. They are worth that. They are worth that enjoyment.
Yeah.
Now you can get out of the box.
They have to be so comfortable in your space that they have confidence in themselves and, yes, like, trust that they can actually do something.
Yes. And it's a very scary, I mean, it's important to acknowledge the vulnerability, and it's very, very similar to making your first scarf or casting on your first stitch is very, very similar to taking your first step as an entrepreneur. It feels like you're stepping off into the abyss, you know, and you're totally alone. There's no one else. You're like, it's do or die. It's so similar. And yeah. And whatever I can do to make that step easier for people, you know, what's the tiniest baby step you can do?
Yeah. So. And so this conversation of the cool Yarn Kids Club, really, it's not so much of how do I join the club, but how do, yeah, I create a club that everybody feels comfortable in.
Yeah. How do you make your own space? Like, hey, if it's like, if it feels like that everywhere, that's an opportunity, you know? I mean, if you're looking around and you don't see a place that you feel like you belong and you're comfortable, then like make one.
Yes.
Because that means that there's other people like you. There are always other people like you waiting for what you have to create. Always, always, always. So,
yes. Yeah. And I should clarify, when I said I think that you're in the Cool Yarn Kids Club, it's not that I think you're high and snobby. It's that like, I think no, of you as like a big name in our yarn world.
So. I mean, I kind of got to create I'm in a really lucky place where I get to choose who the knit stars are going to be each year. But that I don't do that in a vacuum. Do that with a ton of input from 10,000 plus owners of Masterclass, with my team, with, you know, with a lot of help. And I hope I'm not, by doing that, I love making those calls and like, you know, I love, you know, telling people I would like to talk to you about being a knit star, but I never want them to feel like that's a one-way conversation. It's a conversation, you know, is this a good fit? Does this work in your life with all the other commitments? You know, yes, it's a lucrative opportunity, but is it the right one for you? You know, we have real talk. And yeah, I've been told, as much as I have to get on camera and I have to, like, I believe passionately in what I'm doing and in the mission to knit the world together, I always am going to be more comfortable behind the camera, helping people tell their story. Truly, truly, like, I lifting up other creatives is what, that's my jam. That's where I'm my happiest. That's where I'm my best. I will do what I got to do to be front and center, but I'd way rather be the one doing the interviewing. I would love that. Flipped right now in the interview, to tell you the truth.
Well, so, I like to think that these conversations are more, that they are more conversations and not just putting you on the spot, hopefully. Oh,
no, that's fine. But you know what I'm saying. I'm
yes,
I know. I love to ask people questions. I love to learn more about people. That's why I love branding. That was the thing I loved about branding. There are lots of things I didn't love. But delving into businesses, even if they were like industrial boilers and stuff, like, there's just always an interesting story. Like, how did this start? Where did this come from? Why are you passionate about boilers? You know, it's just, it's just the curiosity. I'm naturally just super, I'm curious, George, you know?
Yes. And I'm totally the same. I mean, that's why I'm an introvert, but I've realized the thing I love most about my work now is talking to people. I love the guest speakers inside of the design circle. I love the guests here on the podcast. I love the guests that I have on Instagram. It's like, that's the highlight of what I do is really connecting and talking to people and learning their stuff.
And
I totally understand.
It doesn't mean that you're anti-social. You're not social. You're super social. You just are social on a more intimate, like, one-on-one level. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Totally.
And so something that I love what you... I guess kind of what felt like nice reassurance for, especially for folks who are just starting out and they're like, I have no connections and nobody cares about what I'm doing. You shared that people will ignore you as a nobody. Or no, this isn't exactly what you said. This was my note.
Okay.
I'll clarify. Right. this was you talking about it. But it was like people were ignoring your calls and your requests as you we're starting to build knit stars. And then later they come back to you begging. And so it's like it starts out with them ignoring you, but once you get to a certain level, then everybody wants you.
Yeah. And I don't know that I've had anyone beg because everyone's a little afraid to be a knit star because it like seems kind of, but that's what happened was I started out with certain names that I really wanted, that I had on pedestals, and they were ignoring me because it was a totally new untested concept in our space. So I understand why they did. And since then, some of those people have come around and some of them I've just let it go. They're never going to be comfortable. People say no for usually imposter syndrome kind of reasons, no matter who they are, that's where it comes from. But someone said, I was really depressed about it because I was getting no's from these very big names. And someone said, ask somebody that you are pretty sure will say yes, but make it somebody that you like. If you were going to go to a cocktail party at a yarn event, who would you want to hang out with at the bar? Like, who are you always excited to see when you go to yarn shows and stuff like that? And the first person I thought of was Amy Small. She's like the sweetest possible person with knit collage. And I contacted her and she was like, not just yes, but hell yes. And it was a game changer. I was like, okay, maybe this is a viable concept. You know, maybe I just need to think. And then right after her, I asked Stephen West and he said yes. So I'm like, oh, okay. Now, okay. But, you know, it was, I went through months of major self-doubt about it, you know, thinking, you know, this is, there's no way that knitters are going to get behind this and believe that, that we could do a premium kind of experience like this and that people will pay for it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's a different experience now.
Yes. And you went through a very similar experience with the yarn shop when you were trying to get designers and guests come visit. It was like finally, once you started to get a few folks, then it made it easier to get more. You just kind of had to get your foot in the door first.
Exactly. It was a foothold, right? And it was Lucy Neeby. Again, I probably had asked 10 to 20 teachers and gotten no's. And because I was in Tulsa and they were all only teaching in the Northwest and the Northeast. And it was Lucy Neeby. And she said, sure, I'll come from Canada. And I was like, what? And I mean, and then that was my first time to really learn in person from somebody of that caliber, with that brilliant. And I saw, and I realized everybody needs this experience. Like every knitter really does deserve this experience. And that, so when Masterclass came along as an opportunity years later, I went back to that. Like, yeah, how much that changed it for me. Cause she walked behind me as I was sitting there knitting with the rest of the students who were taking her class. And she said, oh, Shelly, you have such nice stitches. And I was just like, and at that point I'd been knitting for probably 20 years, right? It was in my late 30s. But I mean, it was like, oh my God, I have good stitches all this time. I didn't know if I had good stitches. I don't know, you know, and it was life-changing. And then just to see the way her brain worked and about with double knitting and how she invented and how she could put it together. She was an engineer, is an engineer, I think, as I recall, before she got into knitwear design. So lots of the most brilliant ones really are that math minded background. And it was just like, okay, once she said yes, it just, yeah, is the foothold. Like, okay, if she would come, maybe Sally Melville will come. Maybe, you know, it was, those emails were always so scary to write, but I wrote them. And then after I wrote them, and I, even now, like right now I'm in the middle of reaching out to the stars I want to teach in season 8. Next year is season 8 in 2023. And I'll send the first email. And I'm telling you, I'll have all the emails ready and I send them out all at once. And I will hear from nobody for like a week. And I'm telling them, would you like to be a knit star? I mean, okay. We've had knit stars who've made over 6 figures. Like this is a significant, you know, opportunity in lots of ways. But it scares, I mean, it's people like, what does this really mean? What am I going to have to do? Are they going to come into my house? Are they going to see my stuff? I had a star this, and then I end up having to email them again. And then I'm instant messaging them. And I'm like, it takes effort. And I, like when I had somebody this year that I've been asking for probably 4 years. And I don't take no very and but I know she'd be great. And all this time I was thinking, well, she just must be too busy. She's got too much going on. She doesn't think, I even in my head, I was like, because we don't have, our Instagram follower number is not as high as you would think for what we do. You know, it's just, we're busy building the courses and less so building Instagram. And I thought, well, she's got more followers than we do. Maybe she just doesn't think we're good enough for her. And I swear that was my thought process. And then I finally got her on a call. She agreed to get on a call with me. And it turns out where she lives, I don't want to give away anything about who she is, but she lives in a major metro area. And she was worried, she lives in a small place, and she was worried that her place was not going to be reflective enough of her brand. You know, like she was paranoid about her place. And most stars are paranoid about in some way.
Yes, yes.
It's too small. It doesn't have enough light. And that was the holdback all those years. And I thought, here she is thinking that I'm not good enough. You know, like, yes. people, I'm telling you, people are just people. People are people. Yes. I was talking to another Hollywood star 2 weeks ago who was about being in Knit Start Part 2, you know, and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, how am I? But She's a totally normal person. We should just sit down and have tea and, you know, or margaritas. It was awesome. And, and that's it. People are people, and people in the muggle world, like non-knitters, they are very flashed out by those of us that are in the knitting world. Right. So I joke sometimes, oh yeah, I'm not famous. I'm yarn famous. Right. But yarn famous to people like, I mean, as an example, Julia Roberts, who I have not spoken to, but who this person I was talking to learned from Julia Roberts, like on a set, right? You know, she thinks that knit collage probably is amazing. You know, like we're all just people.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Those things that you do that other people don't do, they're magic to other people, you know? So,
and I think that's part of why I loved the book so much. I mean, why I love connecting with people in general so much is because we all have our differences, but deep down, we're all the same. And it's like, you know, for me, I'm like, oh yeah, I feel exactly the same things Shelley's been through. And like, you know, it's like, whether you're talking about somebody who feels up at the top of the totem pole, whatever universe you're talking about, they deal with the same human emotions
they do.
Anybody does from lower down. And you know, like everybody's the same, really.
Yeah. We all bleed red and all that. So yeah. So it's like, you can't be afraid. It's hard not to be afraid or intimidated. But I think that is one positive about social. It's easier than it used to be able to like message people or something and get through and connect with somebody that you might never. I mean, I talked to Seth Godin before my book came out, you know, like he gave me his address. We sent stuff back and forth, you know, it's like, what is happening right now?
Yes.
But I think the more, you know, the more followers, the more Teflon everything gets, the more people crave that one-on-one connection. So you can really make an impact too with just a little package or a note or, you know, handwritten or, you know, if Michelle Obama is listening, I'd love to have you in Knitstar. So, you know, I mean, anyway, that we're all 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon or even just one away from, you know, the person that is our dream connection. So,
yes. And you also never know when you reach out to somebody, they may answer and that like, you never know.
I just said no 10 times and this might be the time. So, you know, it's why not? Life is too short. And I always say, and I think I have this in the book too. I can't remember because it's been a couple years now since I actually wrote it. You know, it's a process to get it out in the world when you work with a traditional publisher. But my friend from Kentucky, Cheryl, who says, if you don't ask, you don't get. And probably every day that line goes through my mind. There's something I'm afraid to ask from somebody. You know, I talked to my ex earlier today with a tax question. I talked to my boyfriend. I talked to, you know, I'm recruiting for Knitstars. I'm like, I'm my team. And I tell myself, okay, if you don't ask, you don't get. Just, you know, just ask nice. And if it's a no, then, you know, ask again tomorrow.
Yes. And that's exactly the last point I wanted to talk about on this podcast.
Okay, perfect.
Is standing up for yourself and knowing your value. Because one instance was when you talked about you were working for this company and the owner had a not so nice nickname for you and introduced you to the client as that. And you stood up for yourself and like your phrasing was just like that. My nickname was a thing of the past. Like it was just as simple as standing up for yourself and saying, no, my name is Shelley.
Yes.
And sometimes we can make it like into some big, huge thing that it's not, and don't move forward because of that fear. And so I think a big thing in our industry is, and probably the world at large, is valuing your worth. And so you talked about when you asked for your raises several different times, but you shared, I was always really surprised by my creative colleagues' reluctance to advocate for themselves financially. They would fight tooth and nail for a creative concept, but do almost anything to avoid a conversation about a change in compensation or title or even an office with decent lighting that allows them to produce better quality design. There's this romantic ideal of the starving artist, and it's well alive and well and still doing a great disservice to creatives of all types.
This is very applicable for pattern design, isn't it? Yeah. And I mean, okay, well, here, this is a great example. If anybody who's watching this and you're a pattern designer and you're giving everything away for free, please stop doing that right now. If you think that just it's going to get you to the top of Ravelry Hot right now magically, and then, you know, you're just going to be discovered. No. And so I'm going to share this with you. So Arnie and Carlos, they were in season 3, right? So arguably one of the largest stars we've had. And I was sitting on the couch in Norway in their home, which is very remote. It's a remodeled railroad station. Sitting by a lake, we finished the workshop. We're drinking wine out of a box that has their picture on it. Okay. And you can't get it here, but produced in Norway. And I told them, we started a conversation about their business. And I was like, you guys, they were giving all their patterns away for free still. And they said, because our followers, they'll get so mad if we don't make them free. We have to make them free. I mean, there's some of them who can't afford our patterns, so we have to make them all free. I said, you know what? Trust me on this. You guys are to a point that you don't need to give away all your patterns. And I know you make money off other things, but charge for your patterns, even if it's some of them, you know? Well, they ended up taking that to heart. They changed to a paid pattern. They still have a lot of free, but they changed to that. And then COVID hit and I talked to Carlos a few months ago, and he said, you know, NISARS was the most important thing that ever happened to us. And I was like, why? I mean, you guys have made a lot of money from it. That's great. You know, you're proud of your workshop. He said, no, it's the conversation we had. If you hadn't said that to us and then COVID had hit and our teaching all immediately dried up, you know, right? Because they couldn't travel, mm-hmm. we would have had no income. Mm-hmm. And because they were making so much from teaching, they thought they could just give away the patterns and then people would like them. Yes. So it was like, they realized their worth. They realized, mm-hmm. you know, but that just tells you even people at the very, very pinnacle have trouble charging for what they're worth, right? Yes. So, you know, if Arnie and Carlos can do it, and I mean, free patterns is just one example, right? There's a million things, but, you know, set up a structure that's going to set up consistent recurring income for you, if at all possible. And then if those magic moments happen, awesome, right? But set something up that's sustainable for you. And whatever you're charging, just double it. Someone told me recently that because we were talking about just looking at overall budgets and stuff, and they're like, it's so much easier to make money than to save money. Like, you can sit and look and scrape and say, how much less paper can I be buying, or how much less can I be going to Staples? But if you just charge twice as much, how much faster could you be? Honestly, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, take stock of that. Like, put it on your calendar, and every once a quarter go, could I be changing my pricing structure? You know?
Yes. And I think that's extremely important conversation in the design world. We have a lot of work to do there as a industry in general. And one of my biggest things is, you know, talking about free patterns and low price patterns is not only are you undervaluing your worth, you're undervaluing the worth of all of the designers.
Right. You're undercutting your colleagues. Yeah. And just like if I put all my yarn on sale half price, you know, what am I doing to that indie designer? What am I doing to the other stores that are selling that yarn? So it's really very much the same thing. And, you know, so you come up, I mean, I think Françoise Dunoy is so brilliant with her pay what, you know, what you can strategy, those kinds of things. And I know the vast majority pay the top price, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, and so there, you know, it's like, how can you be creative with it and still not sell yourself and others short, you know? And yes, you're right. There needs to be way more transparency in our industry around that.
So. Yes. And the final thing I think for valuing yourself and your worth is also valuing your time and your health. You talk in your book about health scare, and such a big part of your business is you, and you have to take care of yourself,
right?
Because you are important as well.
Yeah, you do. And really, I had someone tell me recently, I mean, the truth is you're better off as an entrepreneur. You think you're doing your best if you're grinding, and how much more can I do? But really, really, if you can build in the rituals, you're going to come up with the best ideas when you're like out and about or in the shower, or, you know, your subconscious has time to work on it. And this is in the book also, but my friend Michelle Fazon has a model called Creativity Without Burnout. She's working on a book. But you can Google Michelle Fazon, FALZON, Creativity Without Burnout. And you can find her podcast. And she talks about the importance of the five steps of creativity to avoid burnout. But the thing is, even I will forget from time to time. And my CEO told me the other day, Shelly, you need to just get out more, just get out more, get out more. I remember once I read about the founder of FedEx, I think, and he called himself the chief walkabout. I think that was the term. Like his job was chief walkabout, like chief get out in the world and walk around in stores and walk around in businesses and see what's happening out there. Because you can't be a visionary. Like your main job as CEO and entrepreneur is visionary, right? And if you are working in it instead of on it, you will burn out and your best work is not going to happen. So yeah, hot yoga, walking, whatever your thing is, knitting, you know, like a lot of pattern designers stop knitting for themselves, you know, or they're only knitting for work. You know, nutrition, you know, all of that. It's not optional. It's not optional. Your best work's not going to happen that way. So yeah, I've had a lot of self scares through, and it's always the biggest sign for me is if I stop knitting, that means I'm too stressed. If I get to the point that I just knit zero, that means I've hit some kind of critical mass. That, like you gotta.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you here, Shelly. Where can folks find your book and Knit Stars and all of the things?
Yeah. So Knit Stars, you can find the book and everything on knitstars.com. You can get access to all the things that we offer through there and all our latest stuff. We have a newsletter called Moving the Needle, and you can sign up for that at the top of knitstars.com. And I like to think we do a lot of storytelling, a lot of lifting up of other creatives, and a lot of curation for people in there. And then the book's available on Amazon, pretty much anywhere you can shop for books. It's out there. I think there's still hard copies on shelves in Barnes and Nobles and things around, but Amazon's the easiest. And we have it also on our website. And I think we might have some signed copies on knitstars.com. If people want a signed copy, I try to sign some on the regular and have them available. So, and there's an audio version of the book too. So for knit people that are doing other things like entrepreneurs and knitters, the audio version, a lot of people have like fun, quick story on that before we say goodbye. And that is when the audio version first came out, I had people reaching out and say, Shelly, why didn't you read your own book? Who did you get to read your book? And I was like, what are you talking about? And I mean, like 3 weeks went by and I just never knew what they meant. I finally downloaded it and I listened to it and they had uploaded it at like half speed. So I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. No one believed it was my actual voice and they had messed up, which was bizarre. It was a major publisher. Anyway, if I sound really like I'm on Quaaludes on your version of the audio, that means you got it in the beginning and you should be able to get an updated version. Anyway, I can't listen to my own voice, but a lot of people have enjoyed the audio version. So yeah, that's out there too. So that's
so wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
Wow. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you found it valuable, please share the podcast with a designer friend. And if you have a minute, leave a review. It's so helpful for me and means the world to me. Chat soon.